to Svarim Chatter Live with a special guest, Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter. We're going to try to get him on easily. So just bear with me as we try to get him on. Technological stuff, try to work out as best as we can. We're going to discuss mainly Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the Yaivitz. So if anyone has any questions, as always, feel free to ask the questions. But like I said, it's just going to be mainly on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So just keep that in mind. I know Rabbi Schachter has written on a lot of things, but I don't think we're really going to get to them. This time, maybe Mr. Shem will come back on and we'll be able to discuss that. Let's try to get him on. I don't know the answer to that. You'll have to ask the expert. Wait till him to get on. Okay. Let's see. Nope. Bear with me here, and we should be up and running in a few minutes. Know how many people here read, Thoughts on Authorship of Chaim Tesiamim is a good question, but we'll see if we get there. Okay, Rabbi Schachter is on. Now let's see if he can join the broadcast here. Invite guests. I'll try to get him on the show. And there we go. Looks like we have him. Okay, I think we have you.
Am I on? Am I on? Do you hear me?
Yes, you're live.
Okay, fine. So you were speaking to somebody else.
Yes, we're on now. So thank you to Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter for joining us today. I do appreciate it. Now, I guess I would start off by asking is just to give on yourself quickly.
Just one second, Reb Nachi. You were talking to somebody else when I came on.
No, someone just asked a question on here. It was just a question I was just talking about. No, it wasn't anything.
Oh, I see. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Okay, so I just wanted to ask you, before you will get to went into academia and studied the Ivets. Before that, I guess you can give everyone just a bit of a background where you went to yeshiva and then where you actually went and studied university.
So first of all, I want to say it's a pleasure for me to be connecting with you this way. And I hope that our exchange will be for the purpose of Lahagdol Toiro Lahadira. That's what we're in the business of doing, to try to educate people and to try to get people to appreciate, in particular, the context in which we will be discussing a great Gedolei Yisrael of previous generations who continue to have a tremendous impact on us in so many different ways. I was born in the Bronx. My father was a pulpit rabbi in the Bronx for over 50 years. I went to Yeshiva Zichron Moshe, which is in the Bronx. I graduated eighth grade. I went for 5 years. I learned in the Yeshiva of Philadelphia. I left in the Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky Shir, was before Rebel Yashir, and I went off to Israel with the intention of going to Karen B'Yavne. It's a long story how we became very close, our family, to the Mira Mishpacha. To make a long story short, Rabbeinish Finkel was the son of Rav Lezi Yudel. Lezi Yudel had three sons, had Chazap, Chaim Zev Finkel, known as Chazap Rashitavis, Rabbeinish, and Rav Moshe. So Chazap Nebuch had a brain tumor in 1967 and came to New York to be treated in Montefiore Hospital, which was right near where we lived. And Rabbeinish moved into my room for 4 months in my parents' apartment while I was in the yeshiva. The room was available. And we became very close. And that summer, in 67, we came to Eretz Yisrael. And what am I going to do? I'm a Philly Bacher. What am I going to do a whole summer? So Rabbeinu said, I'll set you up with Reb Chaim Kamil. Reb Chaim Kamil is the Shem Dover in the Mir. And we learned a whole summer. And the plan was I would go back to Philly for my fifth year. And then go back again. I was going to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and this time to learn in Keren Biavna. Nu was tut min nochem al Reb Chaim Kamil aganzen zomer. And at the end of the summer, Reb Chaim says, nu yankif yesu was tut min. I said, ach geforen in Keren Biavna. So he said, nu I des bleiben don demir ba unze lech lern mit dir aganzior. Which was a major, major, major offer, major offer. And I took him up on it. I went to Rav Goldvich. Rav Goldvich then was a Rosh Yeshiva in Keren Biavna. I asked his Rishus. And Rav Goldvich says, if you could learn with Reb Chaim Kamil, they were Chavrusis in the Chazon Ish Kollel in Bnei Brak in the early 50s. If you could learn with Reb Chaim Kamil, you should. So my original plan was I was going to learn in the Mir in the summer and go to Keren Biavna and then go to YU. I was accepted to YU. It was good to go. But already my Mahalchein after Pesach in the Mir after a whole year, so YU was not in my cards anymore. So I stayed in the Mir, and then when I came back, I went to Torah V'Das, and my smicha is from Torah V'Das, and I started going to Brooklyn College at night. And I met Professor David Berger, who taught Jewish history, and it was like unbelievable. Here I'm sitting in college. I'm getting college credit, and I'm learning about the Ramban and the Rashba and the Meiri, and the first time in my life I ever heard of the machlekes between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz in his classroom at Brooklyn College. So I got all excited, and I said, you know what? This brings together my two worlds, my Olam HaTorah from the yeshiva and my academic, my college. Yeah, what could be better? So I got accepted to Harvard, and I went to study with Professor Yitzchak Tversky, Isidore Tversky. And many, many, many years later, 15 years after I got there, I got my dissertation. I got my PhD on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And in my introduction to my PhD, my Harvard thesis, I have a big Yeshar Koyach and a Hakara Satoiv to Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky and to Rabbi Yishvei and to Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz. And to Reb Chaim Kamil, this was very much a part of my life that I tried to bring together.
Wow, fascinating. So how was it for you to go from in a yeshiva, you were in a number of yeshivas, and then to transition into Harvard and into academia?
The truth is it was easy, and that's partially why I chose Dafka Harvard. The main that Harvard is the C, the Avi voice of the Gewaldige place of academia, but my Rebbe at Gata Langebart, during the week on Shabbos, he's a Chassidish Rebbe, he was the Tolna Rebbe. So he had to figure out how he was going to be the Tolna Rebbe and also the Nathan Littow professor of Hebrew studies at Harvard. But for me, it was easier. He was an Erlich Yid, a Ben Torah. I'd help him make a minyan during the week. I'd run back for Mincha and Ma'ariv. And then in the mornings, they came, we had a minyan. And then Shabbosim, I used to go Shalashudas to hear the Torah. So here was a model, a role model of a very fancy Mechubedika Harvard professor who was very respected by his colleagues, academic colleagues. With a langa, big yarmulke. In the early years, he didn't wear a yarmulke, Professor Tversky. But by the time I got there, the big yarmulke and a langa bort. So to me, the transition wasn't a complicated one. Some of the other professors were more secular. Some of them weren't Jewish. I studied the general medieval history. But the fact that I had him in front of me made the transition a lot easier for me. And that's part of the cheshbon of why I dafka chose to go to study with him.
Right. And the actual studying of academically studying Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that also going from yeshiva to there, that helped also?
Well, it took me a while to get to Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I didn't open up Rabbi Yaakov Emden until probably 7-8 years into my academic work. I was holding by after graduate school of classes and then 2 years of studying for my doctoral exams. And then I started working on a different, entirely different project. So by the time I ended up by Rabbi Yaakov Emden, it was probably 7-8 years into my academic time at Harvard. And here also knew, why did I choose Rabbi Yaakov Emden?
Right.
Rabbi Yaakov Emden is a godel b'Yisroel. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he wrote a parish on Mishnayos, he wrote a Siddur, he wrote a parish on the Torah, Shailas Yavetz. And there's a lot more to him, and there's a lot of complexity to him. But here's a figure that I felt like I had a shaychus to, that I was living in a world that he was living in, and I understood it, and I appreciated it, and I could, I had what to say. Otherwise, to write a Rabbi Yaakov Emden only if you know about the controversy, that's a total falsification. That's Narishkeit. We're talking here about somebody who's quoted in the serious halachic literature ad hayom hazeh and will continue to be quoted. You know, that was a piece of his life. Yeah, it was a very important piece. But my dissertation has one chapter on the Emden Eibschitz controversy, and the rest is to try to understand his life and to understand his methodology. And my yeshiva world education, my appreciation for that made it possible.
And what drew you to Rabbi Yaakov Emden over in as a particular gadol versus someone else, versus a
So
different gadol?
that's an excellent question. It's actually a serendipitous. What happened was that I had a friend at Harvard who was working taka on Rabbi Yaakov Emden for a dissertation. And he also had a contract with Yale University Press to translate Megillat Sefer into English. Megillat Sefer is the autobiography that was written by Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And my friend had signed a contract with Yale University Press. He was going to translate it into English. He went on to other things, and he decided that he was no longer going to be part of this program. So he gave up on working on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. He went into chinuch, high school chinuch, elementary school chinuch. And I actually needed some money at that time. So I was able to arrange to take over his contract with Yale University Press to translate Megillat Sefer into English. And I figured I'll make some money on the side. And meanwhile, I was working on my other topic. My other topic was, how does a culture transfer itself from Western Europe to Eastern Europe? I was very interested in the transition of Ashkenazi Jewry from the time they were living in Western Europe, and slowly they're getting expelled and they're moving eastward. And by the time we come to the end of the 16th, 17th century, they're living in Poland. But how did they get there? Well, what did they put into their suitcase? And that's what was interesting to me. But now I needed a few dollars. So I figured, you know, I'll work on this on the side. It ended up that I was not able to work on that topic. I needed to know Czech in order to do this right, because Prague was a way station as the Jews were making their way, migrating from Western Europe to Eastern Europe. And to do it right, I needed Czech. So from Czech, for me, a bis Czech is Kirchhoek Mizrach mi Meiriv. It would have taken me a year and a half to learn the Aleph Beis. And then I figured, oh, you know what? I'm working already on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I'm poking around a shtickle in Megillat Sefer. You know, Taket sounds like he's a very interesting man. So I sort of backed into him without me lechatchila making a decision a priori strategically that I should choose dafke him as opposed to some of the others.
Interesting. Very interesting. So most people may know this, but maybe you want to you can give a brief, just a biographical sketch of his background, the Ivis's background.
So the Ivis was born, it's not sure, 1697, 1698. He was born into a very chashuva Rabbanisha family. His father was the Chacham Tzvi. He was the first boy. He had three older sisters. And he grew up in Altona, which is a suburb of Hamburg, even Ada Yoimazeh. You can go to Hamburg, major, major city in Germany, and there's a suburb called Altona. Then it was known as the Triple Community, Kihilat Ahu, Aleph Hei Vav, Altona, Hamburg, Wandsbek. His father, the Chacham Tzvi, was the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, took over from his shver, Rabbi Meshulam Zalman Miralles, the Zayde, was the chief rabbi. And then when the Zayde got sick and infirm, so the Edim, the Chacham Tzvi, took over. And it's into this world that Rabbi Yaakov Emden is born. In 1710, the Chacham Tzvi becomes the Rav HaRashi, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi in Amsterdam. So the family moves to Amsterdam, but he runs smack into a problem because there was somebody who was visiting who he accused of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi by the name of Nechemia Chia Chayun. And he aroused the ire of the local Sephardi community who was supportive of Chayun. And he had to leave town, and it's a gewaltig hashtickel. He ended up in Lemberg in Lvov, and that's where he was nifter. He was nifter in Lvov. He was there for a couple of months. But by the time from 1714 until 1717, he was vulgaring around. By then already, Rabbi Yaakov Emden got married and moved in with the Shver in Brod, went on trips to try to sell Sfarim of his father's and to try to collect debts that were owed his father. And then in 1729, he became a Rav in Emden. That's where he gets his name from. He was there for 3 or 4 years. He was not cut out to be a pulpit rabbi. He didn't have patience. He always was tiffling with the Balabatim. And then finally, Gotot Geholfim, he left. And in one of his famous tshuvas, and he repeats this in about 10 different places, that he makes a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam Shelo Yasani Oved, Oved with an Aleph instead of an Ayin. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Shem Torani. He moves back home. He moves to Altona in 1732 before Rosh Hashanah. And that's where he lived for the rest of his life until 1776. And he was a balabas. He lived as a balabas in Altona. When Rabbi Yecheskel Katzenelenbogen, the chief rabbi of Ahu, was nifter in 1749, he tried out for the job. He lost it to Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. When Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz was nifter, he tried out for the job. And he lost it to Rabbi Yitzchak Horowitz. So he was still trying, but he lived as a balabas, and he was a businessman. He writes about all kinds of businesses. He was in real estate and import-export. He was mamash a businessman. And he was shakua yomim v'layla in Talmud Torah, lulei saras chashashuay, ozavadati v'anyi, published Sfarim. And then in 1750, he went after Rabbi Yonasan. He accused Rabbi Yonasan of being a follower of Shabtai Tzvi. And that was a major, 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 massive conflagration in the entire Jewish world. Everybody was putting everybody else in cherem. I tell my Talmidim that if somebody was not in cherem, it was a shtickle of bezoyin for them. Like, what do you mean? I'm not choshev enough that you should put me in cherem? That they were lining up. I also want to be in cherem, otherwise I'm a nobody. But mamish, everybody was, it was gefährlich. And it's not a coincidence that rabbinic authority began to diminish. And before you know it, we have all kinds of movements beginning at the beginning of the 19th century. There was a fertile ground for Haskalah and a fertile ground for reform because of the diminution of rabbinic authority, because such a ton of tishan of bank, because of this controversy, which really, I would say, took up an enormous amount of time. It didn't consume him. He was still publishing and publishing Sfarim, unbelievable. The second Chelik of Shelis Yavitz, and many other Sfarim he published. He was a very interesting person, and the more I learned about him, the more fascinating I was, and I still am. This is an involvement of me with him since the late 70s, so it's a shtick zeit that I've been living with him, and it's amazing.
Wow. How do you actually reconcile that he was said Shalei Yasani Oved, and he wasn't says wasn't cut out to be Rav, so to speak, but then he kept trying to get the Shteler after?
That's a really an excellent question. So he says over and over again in Megillat Sefer, in his autobiography, I never wanted to be a rabbi. I left Emden. I really didn't want to be a rabbi. When I came to Altona, all I wanted to do was be a balabas. And he keeps on repeating, I got job offers. I could have been a rav in this community, in that community. I turned it down. I wasn't interested. And I wasn't seeking any coven. And yet, when he had an opportunity, he actually did try. And it's not clear. The question to what extent is it really sincere, fully sincere, when he says mamish loimet an aleph, like a gesunte huge aleph, that I don't want to be Shalei Yasani of it? Is that mamish totally sincere? Or is there an ambivalence here? And I understand the ambivalence. Mitzad echad, he's not cut out for it. Mitzad echad, I was a pulpit rabbi for 35 years. I know Baruch Hashem, it's a wonderful thing, but it can get sometimes a shtickle tense. But on the other hand, he wanted to be his father. On the other hand, the Zayde gevend the Rav HaRashi, the Tate gevend the Rav HaRashi. So he wanted to follow in their footsteps. So Hagam, he was uncomfortable, but there was a piece of him that really wanted to be like they were. He writes that he writes very often about following in the father's footsteps. He frames his whole fight against Rabbi Yonason in the context of his father's fight against Nechemya Chiya Chayun. You know, it's the Zelba story over again with a different set of characters. So there's a complexity here. I must tell you, I have an enormous amount of respect for Rabbi Yaakov Emden. The more I know about him, the more complicated he was. And the more he was struggling. He was a real person, and he was totally committed to what he believed was going to ratify Klal Yisrael. And he kept on learning. He kept on learning. He kept on producing Torah. It's amazing. It's mamish amazing.
Right. So when you started researching him, which part was most surprising to you, to something you learned about him when you started that?
When I started, I didn't know so much about the complexity. I started, as I told you, just sort of Bizman She'en Yom Ve'en Laila, working on Megillat Sefer. And that was fascinating to me. You know, there's a whole debate about, did he write it? Didn't he write it? There's no question that he wrote it. Absolutely no question whatsoever that he wrote it. And whatever he wrote in there, he wrote. No question about it whatsoever. So there's a lot of self-revelation in there that was surprising to me. You know, Gadol B'Yisrael shares like this. He was fascinating. And for me, the more he shared, the greater he became in my eyes. But that was what was surprising, the level of self-revelation. You normally don't see that. You know, you normally see more of that. You don't know about that. So sort of more b'chadre chadarim, whether it's on his own personal body, about his own desires, his own chukis. You know, people don't talk about those kinds of things. And he did. Did he want it to be published? Did he not want it to be published? There's a lot of discussion, and I'm working through the sugya. But that's what surprised me, and that's what fascinated me.
Right. So mainly, like you're saying, the Megillah Sefer and what he really talked about in there. So is that, so you, like, I mean, we may as well talk about it now, is that that's something that you've been working on for a while. No, well, we lost him now. Hopefully we'll get him back on. Hold on. We're just getting to the part to talk about the Megillah Sefer. There we go. He is back on. Let us add Rabbi Schachter back to the call. Okay, we have you again.
Back, I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, no problem. So now I was going to ask is that you said you were working on the paper for a long time. So now that you're
a very long time, a very very long time, in the Chalchem v'Mezukt in Yiddish, a Chalchem b'Moshbayin. Chalchem b'Moshbayin means I'm holding already at the end of Aleinu. By Shehem Mishdachvim Lehevul Varik, it's a Yiddish expression that we're already holding at the end. And I poured a lot of kaiches into it. It's not just, it's an annotated edition of Megillat Sefer, but I poured in a ton about Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Lamashal, at the end of his Megillat Sefer, he has a list of all of his svarim, those that he published and those that are in manuscript. And I must have three or four pages, roughly average, on each one of these svarim. Vos likto, what's he trying to say? What's he trying to accomplish? What do I learn about him from these svarim? So it's not just about Megillat Sefer, but it's about the gestalt of the whole person.
And this is there will be an introduction to here. There's going to be notes. What's the Sefer going to consist of?
I transcribed the original manuscript. But now I have to clarify that we don't have a manuscript in Rabbi Yaakov Emden's handwriting. We have a copy, which is the Pesach that was given to those who said that he never wrote it, or he didn't write all of it. The stuff was put in, because we don't have the original in his handwriting. So we have a copy in the library in Oxford. I got the microfilm. I copied, went back to Oxford three times over the course of the year, in a couple of words here, a couple of words there. Sometimes the microfilm didn't pick up the last couple of letters on the side in the margin, because it was bound very tight. And when they opened it, they didn't open it mamish tight, tight, tight. So I went back and three times I wanted to make sure that it was exactly 100% correct. Turns out to be about 200 pages typed. I have now at this point 680 pages of annotation plus the 200. And now I'm working on my introduction, which will probably be another 100 pages or so. Now this is typed on computer. I'm assuming when it's published, it will be a little bit less, but it's a pretty serious piece of work.
Right, and this is all going to be in the original Hebrew. This is not being translated.
What happened was I started translating, as I told you, into English, and then I realized that is Shmeknish. I translated from the 1896 printed edition. And I began to see pretty early on that Epis stimmt nicht. So I called for the manuscript. That's when I first looked at the Oxford manuscript. And I saw, Taka, that there were places where the printed edition either was sloppy or deliberately made changes. So every third footnote in my English translation was, I'm translating Lefi the manuscript, not Lefi the printed edition. At which point I said to myself, Narishkeit, if that's the case, put out a printed edition in Hebrew. And Acher, you know, David should give you Arichas Yomim. And if he's still interested, so then you'll do it. Then you'll translate it into English. So it's all in Hebrew. He wrote it, obviously, in Hebrew. My notes are in Hebrew. The introduction is in Hebrew. And I need help. I'm not holding in fancy academic Hebrew. So I write it as best as I can. And I have help. And I'm sure there'll be an editor once I hand it in. And that's what it's going to look like.
And are you going to discuss, like you mentioned before, there was actually a whole sefer printed, you know, discussing it and how claiming that it was not real or parts of it weren't real, and every edition published till now has issues of censorship. Are you going to discuss all of that in your introduction?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be dealing primarily with the previous printed editions. I do not believe that the claim that he did not write it at all deserves serious attention, because I think it's simply misguided. And I could show it in half a page, which is really all I plan to devote to that argument. And all you have to do is you have to know other Svarim of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And then you realize that the kinds of things he writes about in Megillat Sefer are not unusual for him.
Right. And like you said, this is going to be published soon.
Soon. You know what? My chaverim have been asking me, and my talmidim have been asking me, you know, soon, new, Rebbe. All right, new. You know what? As I said, it's a school of Arichas Yomim. But if I have to say, I would say soon. If you ask me, what is soon? Vesuch nicht. When I'll be done, but soon. Sooner. Nenter wie weiter. After 40 years, I'm prepared to say Sushainenta Vivaita.
Right. And now, getting back to when you were in Harvard, your dissertation, which is, I think, 790 or so pages of a study of his life.
Yes.
First of all, is that readily available? And also, why, just curious, why you never published that into a book of sort of a reworked biography of him?
I think, I don't know if it's readily available, but it is available. If you go online, you poke around. It was originally published as a microfilm by University Microfilm International. I think they may have gone out of business, but somebody picked it up. It's available. You could find it online. Why didn't I publish it? I didn't publish it because I had got gedank that I finished after 792 pages. At that point, I was the rabbi of the Jewish Center on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, a gahib in a fancy modern Orthodox shul. And I was throwing myself into my rabbanis, and I simply didn't have the time in the Yishuv Hadas, which would have been required of me to publish it. I had a teacher besides Professor Tversky. I had a teacher, Professor Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, who was my professor at Harvard before he came to Columbia. And Yerushalmi said to me, JJ, I know why you're not publishing it. You're not publishing it because you're worried about Shaduchim for your daughters. That's what he said to me. That's why you're not publishing it. I said, Professor Yerushalmi, maybe you're right. I don't know. Maybe my analyst knows. I don't know. But my understanding is that I just didn't have the time and the calmness. You need Yishuv Hadas. I had to redo parts of it. I realized that in order to turn it into a book, it would have required a great deal of avoda. But I must say I'm very heartened because in the academic literature, people in the field in the 18th century quote the dissertation left and right. So it's not like it's far from somewhere in the Chadre Chadorim in a corner somewhere. So it's out there. So, you know, for me, that's enough.
And are you planning to include some of the biography details in your Mavoi in Megillah Sefer?
Well, the biography is really Megillah Sefer itself. The whole Megillah
Right.
Sefer is his story. It's an autobiography. And wherever there is any event that he mentions, I annotate everywhere else in his entire corpus where he talks about it and anywhere where anybody talks about it. So some footnotes on a particular event can be 2 pages long, and I can have 30 or 40 references to secondary literature and to primary sources that describe it. That's why it's taking me so long, because I want to be able to give a full picture behind everything that he says.
Right. So one sefer for sure that you were involved is the Maror Ktzia on Aruch Chaim. You were, I think, the main editor of that from Pon Yerushalayim. You're an editor of that. How did
Yes,
you
the
get
two. The,
involved with that project?
what happened was my work Rabbi Yaakov Emden was known, and Rabbi Yosef Buchsbaum, Zichrono Livracha, who was the head of Machon Yerushalayim, came to see me, and he said, "You know what? I think we should start a Mifal Rabbi Yaakov Emden under the auspices of Machon Yerushalayim." He was Adam Gadol Ma'od, and he was also very sharp and smart, and he would start the Mifalim. Mifal Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, Mifal Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Mifal the Night of Yehuda. And he would go to people who could raise money to be able to support the publication of these Sfarim. So I'm a rabbi of a fancy shul on the Upper West Side, and I'm interested in Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So he came to sell me that we should start a Mifal Rabbi Yaakov Emden, which I was all very happy to be a part of. And the first sefer was the Maror Ktzia. I worked very closely with Rabbi Yankel Bombach, who is a real aficionado. There's a whole like subculture of people who live in the world of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who you know, wie man sagt in Yiddish, me pokzach, me muzzelzach, in the welt of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. He was one of them, a big yadin in Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And the two of us together worked for about 2 or 3 years to put out this edition. I also put out a Luach Eresh
Right.
of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, less known sefer. It's a grammar sefer. It's a Perush on Siddur. He quotes it hundreds of times in his own Perush on the Siddur, and I have introductions to both. That was not under Machon Yerushalayim. There, I worked with Reb David Yitzchaki, who was Mamish Goyen Adir in Diktuk, who lives in Bnei Brak, and produced Rabbi Yaakov Emden's work. And let's Lahagdol Torah. It's amazing. I'm honored. And I feel very blessed that I've had that opportunity.
Right, that was by Yisrael. So I recently got a copy, but that the Luach Eresh is not in print anymore, though, unfortunately.
I don't know if it is, but here's the thing. I have about 30 copies that are sitting by me in Keshena. So anybody who's interested, tell you to tell me, and the Mirtzah Hashem and the world becomes normal again, I'll be happy to mail it to them.
Oh wow! Okay, that's very generous. Yeah.
My
So I was just
pleasure.
thinking on that Machon, you said, but they didn't end up publishing anything else other than the Maror Ktzia through
No,
Machon Yerushalayim.
we didn't do anything else. I ended up working more on Luach Eresh, and I got busy. I by that time, when I came to the Jewish Center, there were 180 families in 1981. When I left in 2000, there were 640 families.
Wow.
So I was a busy guy. So I didn't have this was all eingestippt bis man schein yom vein laila. My Iker Avodah was as a pulpit rabbi.
So about his Sfarim, he had a his own printing press, and he published, you said, a lot of Sfarim, and there's more manuscript. Why is it that a lot of his Sfarim, though, haven't properly been redone? I mean, like you said, he has a Pirush HaMishnayos, you mentioned Lechem Shemayim. I don't think it's ever been redone, and a lot
It
of his
has
stuff
been. It
still
ha
aren't.
has been. Lechem Shemayim was reprinted in the 80s. There's a 4-volume, smallish.
Right, the four that's a re that was re all right, that was redone, but that's not around for many, many, many years.
Okay, so people are working on it. There's now a whole industry of people who are putting out. There's a new Migdalois. They're putting out the Perush on the Zohar.
Right, two
People
editions.
now are putting out. Somebody just recently put out Aim Labina. These people are working really hard. They've transcribed the Haggadahs of Rabbi Yaakov Emden on many different Sfarim, published in Yeshurun, in the journal Yeshurun. there's now a whole interest. The Sheilas Yavetzor recently put out by a very, very chashuv yid who lives in Muncie. So there is a great interest now in Rabbi Yaakov Emden. For a while it was dormant, but I would say in the last 5, 6, 7 years, long after the Moritzia and long after the law,
right.
There's not like an Ashtikala explosion. And as there should be, his Torah should be brought to the world.
Right, I think that Gois on Tishbi was published, and on Ma'ari Nayim.
That was also done by Rav Bumbach. Rav Bumbach also did an edition of Megillat Sefer. The immediate last edition was done by Rav Bumbach. But his edition, he says, Beferish, is, I'm going to censor it out. I'm only going to publish the parts of Megillat Sefer that are appropriate for Bnei Yeshiva. So he tells you that he's not going to publish the whole thing.
Right. And also the Haggais and Ma'ari Nayim was printed also recently.
The Haggais and Ma'ari Nayim were printed by also a Chashuv Yid in Muncie by Rav Goldstein, and reprinted in a big sefer. There's a tremendous amount of work, and as well there should be. Now, I can't vouch for the absolute accuracy because I haven't had the time and, frankly, the inclination to sit there with the Ksav Yad and see if they copied exactly. But Chazak al Chaver Shein Emotzi Mitachas Yod Adav Shein Emesukan. I'm assuming they want Rabbi Yaakov Emden's words to be as authentic as possible. When they don't know or they can't read it or they're stuck in the manuscript, they put the dot, 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 so that at least they're letting you know that something epis is there, but they can't figure it out. I'm not prepared to say that they're censoring anything out that they felt pasnished. What I am prepared to say, what I believe, is that they were confounded by the smudge or by the rub out or echvesvas, the manuscript. It's a couple of hundred years by now. And so I'm assuming that they're authentic. And these are wonderful Jews who are devoting Belev and Nefesh to Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Tov Aleihem Bracha.
Right, but in the new Aim Labina, which is looks really nice, I own a copy, he does say he put a star every place he talked about other Gedolim, and he did take that out.
So at least he'll tell you that he did it. So das hashoyin a gavaldiga madrega, and I respect him for it. He doesn't want to put it in. That's his business. He can do what he wants. If I were doing it, I would not have done it that way. Haraya, I'm not doing Megillat Sefer that way. I'm doing Mamish letter by letter. Which is what I think is appropriate. You don't tamper with the text, even if you let people know you're going to tamper with the text. But if you're going to tamper with the text, then the fact that you're telling people that you're tampering with the text, so that's already mahal shena fahal beveg. That's okay.
Right.
What else? What else do you want? We're running out of time.
Yeah. So just to finish up over here. So we mentioned earlier the machlokes of Yaakov Emden and Eibeshitz. Where would you tell people that want to look at that historically accurately? They want to read
really it because it's not really been written up. There's not really there are two questions. One question is what happened, and the other question is so Rabbi Schachter. So what do you think? So who's right? You didn't want to ask me that question because you have Valder Cheretz. You're a nice man. So that's the second question. The first question is what's the story? So if you don't want me to answer the second question, I won't answer the second question because you didn't ask.
I'm fine. No, you can if you want.
But the first question is there really, there is not a synthetic history of the Emden Eibeshitz controversy. There isn't. The Boki Goin Adir Sheba Adirim Gedoyle Gedoylim on this subject is Professor Schneer Lyman, Zol Gesundsein Schlita, who knows everything about everything. And in the world of knowing everything about everything, he knows even more than everything when it comes to the Emden Eibeshitz controversy. He has maybe 10 articles on the subject, but the articles are this prat, the attitude of the Noidi Behuda, the attitude of the Pnei Yeshua, the attitude of the Gra. He has a whole interesting article on the attitude of the Gra. There are a lot of details that are fascinating and extremely important. And the Eibishter should give him a Riches Yamim that at some point to put together all of his own articles and everything else and to publish some kind of a synthetic history. So at this point, it really, I don't have a place that I could recommend to learn about it. I would start with Google Professor Schneer Lyman and start poking around and start reading. And then one thing will lead to another and you'll begin to get a good sense about what happened.
And part two of the question?
Part two of the question is fascinating. Part two of the question is as follows, and it's something that a lot of people have asked me, and I'm going to give you an honest answer. The honest answer is that I don't know. And the honest answer is that I don't know because I'm not holding in what did it mean to be a follower of Shabtai Tzvi in the 18th century. It's not so pashut. You say he was a follower of Shabtai Tzvi. Does that mean that he had to believe that the Shabtai Tzvi was Mashiach? We're now 100 years after Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam. It's 100 years after he died. So my understanding, and I'm not really holding in this, is that there's a whole complexity to define what does it mean to be a Sabbatian. There were certain beliefs that people had that by the time we come to the middle of the 18th century are associated with Shabtai Tzvi, but not necessarily someone committed to Shabtai Tzvi as actually having been the Mashiach. Now, I did my work on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. My avoda was to assess Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And so the question that I grappled with is, did Rabbi Yaakov Emden have grounds to believe that Rabbi Yonason was a follower of Shabtai Tzvi, once again, whatever that means? Or was Rabbi Yaakov Emden mamish in Gansen kuloi off base? Because to answer that question, that is important to assess the life's work, the personality of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. I have to touch him up. Like was he onto something? Did he believe? Were there grounds for him? Or this is mamish demyoinis? And my conclusion is there were absolute grounds for him to believe this. And in terms of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I understand why Rabbi Yaakov Emden would have believed this. The evidence from the Kameis, the evidence from Va'avo Hayom Al Ha'ayin, they're serious evidence. Now, was he Taka? I don't know. I didn't write on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. One of the reasons why I didn't write on Rabbi Yonason is because if I would have written on Rabbi Yonason, I would have to paskin this shaila. And I'm not well versed enough, and I don't say this with pride, in Kabbalah to be able to really durch to the sugya to understand what is it that he was saying. I just don't know. So I parse the question in half. Mitzad Rabbi Yaakov Emden, were there grounds for him, legitimate, reasonable grounds for him to think? The answer is yes. But that is irrelevant, utterly, totally irrelevant as to whether or not was he or wasn't he. That's a whole different issue. There are grounds to think that he would have been, but I don't know if he was, and I really don't. I really don't know. I really don't know. And I'll leave you with just a personal struggle. You know, in the Olam HaYeshivas, you know, it's Chas V'Sholem, it's like Mamish Kfira to say that the Rebbe Rabbi Yonason, how can you even have such a Hava Amina? In the academic community, it's a Milsa Dipshitusa. I once spoke at a conference at Hebrew University, and I did not call Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz a Sabbatian, and I got killed for it. I got blasted. You know, you're a frum, charedi, kanoi, mishugana, you're not prepared to be Maidala MS. What's wrong with you? I was excoriated because I didn't say straight out, Rabbi Jonathan Eibshitz, comma, the Sabbatian. So by them, it's a milsa dipshitusa. In the Olam HaYeshivas, it's mamish. How can you say something like that? Now, I live in both worlds. Right. I live in both worlds. I'll give you another example. So when I was learning in yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, the way we called the parish al Torah at the end of the 15th century, we called them the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel. I come to Harvard. Vos mandachar shmei. His name is Abravanel. His name is Abravanel. So we say the Olam HaYeshiva, the Abarbanel, and they don't say the. They say Abravanel. So now when I teach, what do I say? Do I call him Abarbanel? Do I call him Abravanel?
One point.
I call him Abarbanel. So it's a reflection of my. I saw somebody writes here. He's disappointed that I won't commit. Why should I commit if I don't know? I'm disappointed that you said that. It is utterly inappropriate for you to have a taina to me. What I'm a chuyif to commit? I'm telling you, I don't know. You think I'm afraid to commit? You're wrong. You're wrong. Judge me fairly for what I said. Judge me fairly for what I said.
Absolutely. Now, Barb, at no point, Professor Eric
Lally.
Lally, he has a book. He says that it is a barbanelle, and he's an academic, a very high. He
Good.
says it
I'm
is a
proud
barbanelle
of him. We were in Harvard
in
at
his
the same
book.
time. Good. I'm proud of him.
One last question, if I can ask you, though, is that the
Final
Yavetz,
question.
final question. It's always been curious to me. He has a very interesting opinion that the Rambam did not write Meir Nevuchim. I mean, for a late Achron of his time, it's a very odd opinion.
So, first of all, it's not so pashut because I have an article in a book that was a collection of articles in honor of my late teacher, Professor Tversky. And the title of the article is The Attitude of Rabbi Jacob Emden to Maimonides. And I write in this article that there are places where Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that the Rambam did not write Moreh Nevuchim. And the reason why he said it is because it's a reflection of Rabbi Yaakov Emden's discomfort with philosophy, bichlal. So how is it shayach? How is it shayach that the Rambam, the Mamish, the Yad HaChazaka, the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, the Baal Halacha, Asher Mipiv Anu Chayim, how is it shayach that he could have written a philosophy book? So it's Rabbi Yaakov Emden's discomfort with philosophy that leads him to bifurcate the Maimonidean corpus to say this is Kodesh Kodashim, and that can't be. It's not shayach because I can't be soevel philosophy, so I can't imagine, and it's not possible for Yaakov, for the Rambam to have written the Meir Nevuchim. However, I have demonstrated, and in my notes to Megillat Sefer, I have more examples. I have at least a dozen places where Yaakov Emden says, "Azay agav urcha milsa dipshi chusa kamaisha kosav a Rambam b'Meir Nevuchim," that where he's not polemicizing, ventzegetem nishn lebem. And when he's not screaming about philosophy, it's a plate to spare. So it's
Right.
not so pashut. So you understand what's going on here. Where he's polemicizing against philosophy, he rejects the Maimonidean authorship of the guide. But when he's in the middle and in the middle and he just assumes it like everybody else.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Schechter, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. I wish you well. Hatzlacha Rabbah. Be well.
Okay, be well.